To item number six, the director's report. So, Director Starr.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners, good morning. Good morning, members of the public. Thanks for coming out. I've got a couple of issues Amy and I are going to tag team on. I want to touch also a little bit on the budget. I know you've had a chance to read the emails we sent, but I want to hit a couple of highlights, and then I'll ask Regional Director Jim Brown to come forward and give you about 5-10 minutes about what's happening in Region 2. That's something I think we try to do when we're out and about in the state. First, I wanted to just touch on the ORCA executive order from the governor. Chair Smith mentioned that. We had a pretty large celebration, recognition of the plight that the southern resident killer whales are in. I think their population's down to 76 from up near 100 several years ago, and a lot of concern that's focusing around prey availability, contamination in the water from stormwater runoff and other sources, and then noise and the impacts that noise has on the killer whale's ability to locate food, locate prey. So executive order was issued. There were about 100 people in the audience, lots of local officials, tribal members, state officials. The department received, there was no policy legislation that passed, even though there were several bills out there. The department received about $55 million for enforcement patrols. That's to go after the noise issue, to keep the recreational boats especially further away from the whales. About $1.6 million to raise up to 5 million new Chinook salmon for release, and hopefully to support the prey needs of the killer whales. We'll be looking at hatcheries from the Columbia through Willapa up into the Puget Sound for that increased production. And then some funding for fish screens and to facilitate the, we'll be a leader on the task force that the governor established to look at additional measures for protection of the whales. And then some capital funding. So a pretty strong investment in the agency. We'll be leaders in this effort, working with other state, local, and federal agencies. Barry Thom from NOAA was at this event too. And trying to move forward to save these, emblematic creatures and keep them around for the future. Commissioner?
You didn't mean $55 million.
Need a mic, Barbara.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did say that.
Right? I was going to
say $55,000.
Yeah, right. Wishful thinking.
Yeah. Let me say that different. $548,000 for enforcement and $1.6 for hatchery.
I thought I missed that number at the meeting the other day.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the correction.
What? Excuse me.
Just a point of clarification. I want to make sure I wasn't able to attend that, but... you mentioned it as it relates to the boat noise issue, because I've been involved in that on a local basis for a long time. You mentioned recreational boats, but where did the whale watching industry piece come in, and how does that relate to the problem? Because that has in the past been noted as a more.
Yeah, I was rolling those all together, Commissioner. Okay. I think the bigger problem are the whale watching boats, and I know especially those out of Canada.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, thank you.
One more.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another question on the increase in hatchery production for ORCA, and I'm not sure if we're going to get this, and are you going to speak more to that?
No.
Okay, so the press reported something about the department having to come up with some hatchery enhancements by the end of the year. Is this increase of 5 million smolts for this fall's egg take for fish that would be produced kind of immediately in existing facilities? Or is there any movement that by the end of the year there be some recommendations for further increased production that wouldn't be until eggs are taken in the fall of 2019 or beyond?
Yeah, it will take some time to identify the hatcheries to put some of the capital improvements in place. So we're talking probably a ramp up, and we'll start seeing those fish actually being released in 2-3 years down the road.
Continue.
So I'll let Amy talk a little bit about our diversity advisory committee.
Okay. So our diversity advisory committee, we've met twice now. It's a committee of about 25 folks from across the agency. We have two co-chairs that were selected by the committee. One is Dan Christensen from Enforcement and Lori Peterson from Fish Management. So they're going to be co-chairing the committee. Diversity is really the source of our talent. It is how we bring perspectives and new ways of doing things into our organization. The committee is also talking about inclusion and equity as being the core pieces in order to get to diversity. The department's focus on diversity, we can't achieve it unless we start talking about a respectful workplace, and that's really about inclusion, and that's including, as the committee said, no oddballs out, all oddballs in. And that we want to create a workplace where everyone's perspective finds a voice and that that's celebrated, and that is the source of how we do our work. And in order for that to work, we need equity. And equity means that people have what they need in order to be successful at work. So the committee is really shifting from the idea of just about diversity to diversity, inclusion, and equity. They formed two subcommittees. The first subcommittee would like to provide some input to the commission around hiring the director and making sure that the process of hiring the director thinks about inclusion and makes sure that we are using best practices around an inclusive process for that. So they are going to set up a call with Director Storr and with Chair Smith. And the second committee is to work on our charter. So we should have a charter probably by May or so, and we'll be able to present that to y'all or send it to you. So that's where we're at now. So thank you for your commitment to diversity, inclusion, equity. And I think one of the side benefits is that we are bringing people together in our agency in a non-siloed way. And we have folks from across the generations. We have the LGBTQ community represented. We have all the different ethnicities and racial backgrounds that exist at the department coming together. And then we have all the layers of fish program with wildlife program with enforcement program with different regions across headquarters. And it's really, it's one of the few places that I've been to in the department that actually has all that at the same time. So it's pretty juicy. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Amy, for your leadership on that and the critical role that it is playing. And I know I speak for the whole commission. We welcome the input of the committee into the director search process.
Another point around diversity and around one of your favorite topics, Mr. Chair, youth involvement. Our new enforcement chief, Steve Baer, has put 4 intern positions out for recruitment, with a heavy emphasis in the Yakima Valley. And we're hoping to attract young people, hopefully some young Hispanic people, to serve as interns in the enforcement program and spend the summer with us doing things like working wildlife areas, working on fisheries issues, but hoping to build some interest in whether they come to work for us or come to work for some other natural resource agency, to give juniors and seniors in high school that grounding and have them get to know us and hopefully potentially in the future be part of our agency.
That just brought to my mind, Joe, something that probably other communities, but here in Wenatchee, every year we have a Chief for the Day program, and it allows youngsters to be part of the police department, part of the fire department for a day, and they get full uniforms and get to travel in official vehicles and that sort of thing. And that might be kind of a fun thing, a good thing that the department could do as enforcement for the day and get some of these youngsters in the field and show them what we do in the field. And maybe inspire some youngsters to join the force later on.
Yeah, Commissioner Graybill, we actually do that. Our enforcement program has been doing that for a number of years. In fact, the police chief here in Wenatchee, Steve Crown,
right.
came out of the enforcement program. So I don't know if
right.
you should take credit for that being here or not. But.
Well, you know, there's another example of a great program that I'm not even aware of, and I'm sure the public isn't either. And that would be the benefit of a day like that, is to get something positive in the media about the department.
Yeah, just pick up on that, too. Yesterday we were talking about good news is news. That I was going to say, this is a really nice news bit here. So,
right.
And I, again, I'm speaking for all of us, commissioners, I'm sure. But anything we can do to encourage us to participate in an event or something of that nature, because now that you baited it with four in this region, you know, automatically I'm thinking, whoa, four in every region, or a couple in every region. So let's see this as a work in growth progress.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's pretty exciting. I think we had 200 applications.
Wow.
For those four positions. So lots of interest.
Wow. Great.
I wanted to go back and add another point to the ORCA issue, and I just wanted to emphasize that that isn't just a Puget Sound deal or a Puget Sound coastal issue. There are implications all up and down the Columbia on a number of fronts. There are implications up the Columbia River as it goes into North Central Washington. So that it's a statewide issue, and we've had statewide interest from the legislature. So more to come on that as that moves forward.
Brad?
Yeah.
You know, Joe, as we ramp up production with the goal being to help the recovery of orcas, particularly to the Columbia River, we're also expanding and increasing the food source for the sea lions that are an issue in the lower river. And I'm hoping that we can perhaps leverage this effort and to bring awareness to the issue of the sea lion population, not only there, but also in Puget Sound, which is another species. But it may ultimately help us bring resolution or more attention, at least, to that issue.
Sea lions are getting more and more attention. Commissioner Graybill, a couple of examples. We recently signed on to a letter with Oregon and Idaho and the Columbia River Tribal, CRTFIC, Intertribal Fisheries Council, mm-hmm. Asking for help from NOAA. The letter went to Mr. Thom and asked for help from NOAA on the Willamette. The Oregon's having huge issues along mm-hmm. with the Willamette. Asked for some additional support for the Section 120 permit on the Columbia itself. And then some specific technical assistance around the Section 120 permit. So the three states and the tribes have stepped up and asked to work with NOAA to kind of up our game along those lines. And then you'll also hear in a minute about a discussion that Commissioner McIsaac and I had with Oregon and the commission meeting. So there's a lot of attention, as well as you know, the discussions you all are having around the Puget Sound and Chinook management in the Puget Sound.
Excellent. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question on the immediate versus long-term time frame for any Chinook enhancement. So there's been money allocated to do something right away. Does the executive order call for, or is there an expectation that they would be open to any initiatives coming from the department for additional Chinook enhancement beyond this immediate money allotment that perhaps they might be willing to fund in the future if there's areas that can be found where there can be enhanced Chinook production without aggravating risk to the recovery of wild stocks?
I think that's a large part of the executive order. The intent is to bring people together at the local, state, federal level and look for ways to enhance these orca populations. The whole purpose behind the task force, which we will have a very significant part in, Dr. Penny Becker is playing a lead role in terms of staffing and supporting that task force. Their mission is to come up with additional ideas, short-term or long-term. So there'll be, you know, a number of avenues for us to step forward with ideas that we have.
Bradley? I'm going to back up a little bit, Joe, back to the sea lion deal. What department is NOAA under? Is it Interior or what?
Commerce,
okay. And hopefully there's been some pressure put upon our national representatives, McMorris Rogers and those people, so that they're getting the word to Commerce, because, I mean, there again, this is something that, in my world of the resources, we've seen some pretty good changes made to make this stuff more friendly. So,
yeah, Commissioner Holzmiller, there have been you know, a number of conversations. I couldn't list them all, but from a number of parties with the congressional delegation around pinnipeds in the Columbia.
Yeah, Representative Herrera Butler in Don's neighborhood. I know she's very interested, and she has a. One of her top legislative aides grew up in a commercial fishing family from Bellingham. His name is Jordan Evich. He's a very smart young man and very interested in commercial fishing issues, or fishing issues, I should say, not just commercial fishing issues. So, you know, and she's got a good spot on appropriations, which is always helpful. So I know her office is very engaged in this, and so that's reassuring. This is a long process. It's nothing's going to happen quickly, but you're right. I think the more that we can do to speak to our representatives that are interested in this topic, the better off that we'll be. So,
okay, I'll move on. I have three small reminders, maybe, or three small items to discuss. The first, I mentioned briefly, Commissioner McIsaac and I were asked by you all to contact Oregon and talk about opportunities for getting the two commissions together. We had a phone call and spoke with Director Melcher and Commissioner Mike Lynch. And it was actually pretty positive, enthusiastic response that we got. We are looking at a November 1st target date for getting the commissioners together. We would append that on to your standing commission meeting, which was scheduled for the 2nd and 3rd in Olympia. So we'll have to move, and Tammy's already made accommodations to move that meeting down to Vancouver. So the plan would be to go to have it at the Heathman Lodge on the 1st with the Oregon Commission, and then on the 2nd and 3rd, our standard commission meeting. The agenda topics we talked about, just as a, you know, as a draft, kind of a brainstorm, included the Columbia River policy, the Columbia River guides and issues or activities associated with guides, predation, I mentioned pinnipeds before, and perhaps birds too, cormorants and others, and then ocean acidification. There are some groups that both states participate in looking at the impacts of ocean acidification on shellfish and other species. So that's a starting place for the agenda items. We'll need to get together again with Oregon to start to solidify that agenda and look for shaping out the day. Commissioner Holzmiller?
I'm squirming over here. It's, and there again, there's never a lack of issues to deal with, but one that I would really like to see you throw into that is some wolf issues, because in my part of the world, that's where our wolves have come over from Oregon. The Mnaha pack is a problem pack, and with Oregon's program that are pretty hard to deal with, and I know I've talked with Donnie about it, because we have wolves crossing back and forth all the time. And I know if some Oregon wolves come into Washington and kill some cattle and go back, that's going to fall a real hollow on some of our producers. So, and it isn't just in our immediate area. It runs on all the way down to Walla Walla. So if we have an extra time, I would love to see that.
Okay. Commissioner Grable?
We may be, and we can talk about this, but it might be an opportunity to have some presentations on efforts that we're making on viewing the Columbia River management and fish passage basin-wide. Currently, I believe that there is a view from the other side of the river that responsibility for fish passage and harvest ends at McNary Dam. Mm. And we're doing a lot of work that will demonstrate the importance of upriver passage for the production of the fish that are harvested in the lower river and below McNary Dam. This would be an opportunity to share what we know and how important it is for upriver passage of several species of salmon.
Okay. I've got that, sir. Okay, I'll continue. Another reminder, the WAFWA summer meeting is going to be hosted by Oregon this year. And that'll be in Eugene, Oregon, July 12th through 16th. So this will be an opportunity for relatively short travel, relatively low cost, for our commissioners to meet commissioners from other states, or for you to listen to what's going on in other states. So just wanted to have you put that on your calendar if you're interested. Then the last piece I have before I get to the budget is just to let the commission know that we are ready to discuss the question around authority of our agency to regulate suction dredging. That was something you asked us to look at. Because of the legal situation that we're in, the challenges that we're under from a legal basis, that probably ought to be done in executive session. And so if the commission's interested, we could probably, you know, use a half an hour today, or
we planned that.
At your pleasure,
yeah,
but
at the end of the day, we'll do that.
Okay, so we're ready for that, and I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Then let me just talk a little bit about budget. As I said, I know that you read the messages and you saw the highlights. We just had a really successful budget effort during a supplemental year this last time around, and I want to thank Raquel Crozier, Owen Rowe, Nelson Falkenberg, Nate Pamplin, who's led a lot of that, our program assistant directors. I mean, we had a great team effort, and I think built a lot of credibility and got ourselves in a good place as we anticipate next session, where we're going to have to deal with this $30 million structural deficit that we have. So I'm just real proud of that, and I think it bodes well for the agency as we move forward. This was a supplemental that in between the regular session and the supplemental, there was a resolution finally for the Hearst decision. This was the water availability decision that was hanging up a lot of progress, especially on the capital budget. For the first time in a long time, there was no capital budget passed until there was resolution of that issue. That resolution came. That included $300 million in watershed restoration and enhancement work over the next 15 years. So, you know, a real dedication of state resources towards the whole water rights, water availability issue, in-stream flow, fish protection, you know, all fitting together. And you were speaking to the Yakima Basin Integrated Plan earlier, where there were compromises made on all sides to come together. And the strength that's in that unified package in Yakima has drawn resources, it's drawn a community working together, it's pulled the tribes and the states together. That was a model that they looked to in this Hearst resolution, and so I'm hopeful that that model's going to carry us forward over the next 15 to 20 years. It'll mean a lot of new work for the agency. The agency received $580,000 to carry out our part of that work, and we'll have a significant role there. It also freed up the capital budget. So we now have $57 million for new projects, projects around forest health, prescribed fires, hatchery infrastructure, fire damage at some of our wildlife areas was part of the new supplemental budget, but it kind of broke the logjam. And you know, we are making progress on the infrastructure backlog that we've had for a long time. Every biennium now, over the last three or four, we've been able to put 40, 50, 60 million into our infrastructure deficit. A lot of that hatchery infrastructure, but also lands and pick away at that, you know, multi-hundred-million-dollar problem that we've had there for a long time. So that feels great. We received some funding for our primary bill that we sponsored was to deal with disabilities, people with disabilities, hunters and fishers with disabilities, and so that bill passed. Our other bill on streamlining or attracting recruiting for fishing and hunting did not pass. There was a huge log jam in the legislature. It wasn't due to content, but just the log jam of bills that were trying to make it through the gauntlet there held up our other bill. We received some funding, about $500,000, for fish health and disease. There were new federal requirements that had us do more veterinarian work at our hatcheries, and we got some funding for that. We got the last phase of our funding for Puget Sound steelhead early marine survival, just a critical part of understanding what's going on in the Puget Sound with steelhead and why they're not making it through the sound. Wildlife trafficking initiative 1401 that we've been responsible to implement for some number of years and didn't have the funding. We received some funding for that. A small bump up, Commissioner Holzmiller, for the PILT issue. So Assotin County, while not getting everything it would have gotten if the legislature hadn't scaled back, is now getting what it deserves compared to other counties, as well as two other counties. Wolf translocation, Representative Kretz's bill did not pass, but we did receive $183,000 to start to look at the SEPA process and, you know, what it would take from a SEPA point of view to consider wolf translocation. And we'll have to be, you know, working with the attorneys and working with the legislature on how we move that forward, how far that can go, how it relates to the WAG discussion. There's a lot of questions there still about the framework that fits into, but it was good working with Representative Kretz this time around on this bill and others. Our CODI system for our IT systems, again, a infrastructure backlog issue. Our CODI system was found to be outdated. It's about 10 years old. This is the system our officers use to enter into their daily logs and where they are and what they're doing. We received $1.4 million to update that system, which was a huge ask. It's hard to get legislators to be impressed with your IT infrastructure. But we did, and we also received about $2.5 million for rebuilding our internet, our network. Again, a hard one to get funding for, but they recognized the need and supported us. So I won't go through all of it. There's much more there. But just wanted to highlight a few things and just express appreciation for all you've done, but for all the staff have done to put us where we are.
Yeah, I'll open it up for other input, but I think I speak again for all of us on the commission. Please pass on to Raquel as the lead and all the other staff our deep appreciation for a job well done.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, sir.
And one other side note, on the disability, hunting and fishing disability, I'm not sure the link with our ADA committee, but they could be very helpful and instrumental in providing input into how we better service that community.
Yeah, we should tee that up.
Yeah. So, other input? Yes.
And Mr. Starr needs to make certain that he takes a bunch of the credit for what was done with the legislature, because talking with the legislators from my side, and I visit with Raquel on a fairly regular basis, you played a very vital part of that too, Joe.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner. Nate and his team, that the team that he pulled together, have been just, you know, right out there in front, and we'll keep doing that. The last thing I had for the director's report was to ask our regional director, Jim Brown, to come up and just give you a flavor of what's going on in the region here. We're in Wenatchee.
Thank you, Director. Good morning, Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director, Deputy Director, fellow RD. And I also want to take the opportunity to welcome the new commissioners, since I've had an opportunity to speak in front of this body. I think everybody else I'm looking at here has been here for a while, but haven't had a chance to speak in front of Commissioner Baker and Commissioner McIsaac. Welcome to Region 2. Nice to see you all here in North Central Washington. As your regional director for the last 5 years, I came over from the enforcement program, from those of you who don't know me. So I've been in this region for close to, I think, 18 years now. Came out of the Okanagan area. I'd like to give you a quick rundown on some of the highlights, kind of a verbal tour of the various projects that we have going on. And the following are just examples of a portion of the great work that you can see occurring on any given day in Region 2. And trust me when I tell you, I'm only touching on some of the high points. We continue to work with the Department of Ecology's Office of Columbia River on several water-related improvement projects occurring in the region. Some of that is related to the work that Commissioner Graybill was just talking about at the beginning of today, work that's occurring in Region 3 regarding the Yakima Basin Integrated Plan. We have similar processes occurring up here in Region 2. Our work supports finding solutions to better manage and store water for improved in-stream flows for fish, and to relieve pressure on the Odessa aquifer, as well as provide more reliable water for people who are living in the growing communities over here. We're now planning for the opening of the third consecutive season for sturgeon harvest within the Priest Rapids and Wanapum Dam project area. Some of you may recall that I first announced this when I spoke to you back in 2016 in Moses Lake. This fishery is a result of continued strong management effort and cooperative relationships with Grant County PUD and our co-managers at the Yakima Nation. We've been able to use harvest as a needed management tool to target segments of the sturgeon population in the mid-Columbia in an ongoing effort to regulate the population for sustainable growth and healthy genetic content. It's been a bright spot in the region for an area when there's continuing challenges, as you know, for consistent mid-Columbia River fishery opportunities here. It may surprise you to hear that our 2014 and 2015 Carlton and Okanagan complex fires have recovery efforts that are continuing. The scale of these fires and their impacts to agency lands were so large, and the FEMA process for reimbursement so lengthy, that we're just now getting a handle on the last of the fencing and infrastructure repairs that we've been needing to do. Our staff continue to demonstrate their commitment and resiliency in response to these immense challenges, and they've been pretty strong. The department's prescribed burn team is also based in Region 2 out of Okanagan. That team continues to do good work by reintroducing controlled fire on several wildlife areas, reducing catastrophic fire risks, and improving habitat conditions for these ecosystems that actually evolved with low-intensity fire. And this is improving productivity for wildlife. This grant-funded program will be expanded this year with, I think it was $5 million that we got from the legislature. We're going to be expanding that into Region 3. A lot of the work that's occurred so far has been limited to Region 2 and Region 1. And so now by being able to expand the footprint of this work, we're expanding the scale of the benefits across more of our lands. Our private lands and field biologists are working with private landowners to continue to implement several portions of important Farm Bill funded programs that benefit wildlife. I think there's something on the agenda even about Farm Bill later. We also have field staff that work with volunteers and partner organizations on a myriad of cooperative projects, and all of this work is to protect and enhance habitat that's important for several species, including several sensitive species of concern. Our fish and habitat programs continue to improve management of fish resources, engage in community growth planning, sustain hatchery operations in cooperation with our PUD partners, and assist with habitat improvement projects for species such as bull trout, salmon, and steelhead. Much of the cutting-edge salmonid research, such as life cycle modeling, is coming from right here in Region 2. Our habitat and wildlife programs have been actively engaged locally in the Stemelt Basin. That area is right here above Wenatchee and is an ongoing Chelan County-led collaborative recreation planning process. This process is occurring across multiple state and county land ownerships, including a large portion of WDFW lands. It involves input from many diverse interests, individuals, and groups, and all of them have a stake in the outcome, including the agency. It is a unique effort crossing state, county, and community lines for real collaboration that we don't often see today. Our enforcement officers continue their work in providing first-rate service to all the citizens of the state in protecting our natural resources and in enhancing public safety on our lands and waters. They've added emphasis patrols in areas with persistent unlawful activity, along with great investigative work, and have made arrests in this region of those responsible for some pretty significant impacts to the public's natural resources. We have responsibility in Region 2 for about one-third of the agency owned and otherwise managed lands, and we have 192 water access sites, more water access sites than any other region in the state. Our wildlife area and access site personnel work hard to improve habitat and to keep our access sites as clean and safe as possible within our staffing and budget limits. We continue to work to provide increased recreational opportunities, identify areas where we can improve ADA access, and have improved our management of noxious weeds, fences, and other long-standing maintenance issues. And as I said, these are not easy within tight budgets. I believe O&M was one of the things that we didn't get funded in the supplemental session. We're soon receiving we're soon receiving a drive-on vessel and trailer wash station for aquatic invasive species prevention that was acquired through a grant process. This station's to be located at our regional office in Ephrata, and it'll allow the department to better respond to the need for cleaning of imported boats and trailers coming here from high-risk areas of the country. It is yet one more tool for us to use in our continued emphasis on preventing the spread of aquatic invasive species. In closing, I'd like to state that I continue to be proud to work with our personnel in Region 2. They provide consistent public service on a daily basis while maintaining positive attitudes through the many challenges to accomplishing their work. I continue to believe it is our people that make Region 2 a great place to work. An engaged and effective staff, along with our many volunteers and partner organizations, can and do accomplish great things for the resource and the public we all serve. I'll be remaining here today if any of you have any questions or want to talk with me about anything later.
Thank you, and it's our pleasure to be here, and thanks for your leadership in a very outstanding, beautiful, diverse district. So.
Thank you.
Bradley?
Yes.
And I don't know whether you were in part in on this or whether you were just a benefactor, but whoever poached Matt Eberlein from the DNR to put in charge of your fire program around here did a stroke of business. He's a smart, smart guy, and it'll be really beneficial. Hopefully he can get ahead of some of this and take care of some fuel loads. Plus, when the crap hits the fan, he will be a big, big asset to have, because we've worked with Matt for a lot of years. He helped us form our Blue Mountain Fire District down there. Smart, smart guy. Knows he's doing. You get him in a bad situation, he handles it well. So I'm sure you're happy you have him.
Oh, very much so. I can't take credit for hiring him, but I can certainly take credit for working with him. He's been a very good asset. He has taught me quite a bit and continues to teach me quite a bit about fire and fire safety. And Matt was definitely a good ad. That's a good observation, Commissioner.
Director?
Yeah, I had one other thing I had meant to bring up. This last month we lost John Pierce. And John was a fundamental part of the agency and the program. Guy who worked on conservation all his career, and so we're going to miss him. And just wanted you to know that, and that we'll let you know about services.
Thank you. Yes.
thanks for being here, Jim.
Sure.
Due to proximity, I have a great relationship with our regional people. They've been a very responsive and just a great staff to work with throughout. You know, you mentioned, you know, you've got about a third of the lands and 162 just water accesses. How many enforcement people do you have here in the region right now?
You know, that's sad because I was in this region for enforcement for so long.
It's, yes.
I can't spit out a number for you. I knew somebody on the commission would ask me a question, and it would be the one that I should have the ready answer for. I'm going to do some quick math in my head. 12? Maybe 12. And we're actually at about the highest staffing level in Region 2 that we've been in a long time. There are several places in the state that aren't as fully staffed. Historically, though, I think the region had somewhere maybe closer to 15. Mm-hmm. But I want to say we're up to 11 or 12, and I'm rolling the captain in there and, you know, the sergeants.
Sure.
And stuff, too.
Well, it doesn't take long. If you just go to the regional maps to see the size of the territory that Region 2 is responsible for, and even at historic levels of 15, I think even then we were feeling like we were short in terms of meeting needs in this very, very large region. And that continues to be a challenge.
Well, we have five counties, as you know, and Okanagan County alone is bigger than at least two New England states.
Right.
So when you look at, granted, those New England states have larger populations, but when you look at their entire natural resource agency, may have 40 officers or something like that. A lot of that's built on population, but a lot of that's built on geography.
Right.
And geographically, we have four officers in the Okanagan, and that's a lot of country to cover, as well as Northern Douglas County. They take in Northern Douglas County as well.
Exactly.
So
it probably takes one officer just to keep an eye on Commissioner Graybill, too.
No, all you got to do is follow him on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, Commissioner Keeney.
Hello, Jim. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Those officers may be spread all over the place, and I live in Okanagan County, but their public service is outstanding.
Well, thank you.
Two summers ago, Officer Troy McCoy was checking licenses at Green Lake when he heard my daughter's car with three people in it rolling down the hill that went off the embankment and rolled eight times, totaled the car, hit a tree, and he was the first to respond. You know, it just means a lot that they're out there, they're always doing their job, they're always on duty, and it just, they do an amazing job out there.
Well, I'll take credit for Troy. Troy worked for me, and we recruited him into the Tenasket station. So, yeah, he was definitely a good addition, and thank you for sharing that story.
Mr. Thurber?
Thank you, and thanks, Jim. Good to see you.
See you too.
I was interested in your aquatic invasive species station and a little bit more information about it. I'm so glad the state is able now to be stepping up our work to try and prevent these invasive species. Is it mobile, or how are you planning to operate it?
Well, it basically comes in modules on a truck. It uses a what is essentially, when you look at it externally, although it looks a lot nicer, the main unit looks like a cargo container, like you'd see for ocean-going cargo container, painted up nice and everything else, but it's self-contained within that. It has a water reuse system, has its own heating system for water. It has a rack assembly that you drive up on that contains all that water and recirculates it back through the system. We haven't exactly worked out the details on how to operate. It doesn't come with any staffing, but we do have AIS staffing, and we'll probably set up some sort of a reservation system for people to come and then have the designated AIS folks run it. But I've got the plans at my office, which I think I have some electronic version, too. If you'd like, I can email that stuff to you. But it's all self-contained. And it, like I said, it comes in. They put it together right on the spot. So the prep work really involves our camp program, putting in the concrete pad and the electrical attachment infrastructure and all of that to hook into power. But we have a space. We'd scoped it out, and we were hoping to get the grant, and we did. So.
Mr. Carpenter.
I'll be brief. It's not really a question for you as it must be for Joe or Nate. I brought this up 5-6 years ago, I guess, when I first got on the commission, because I spent a career in the boating industry. And I had made a recommendation that we evaluate boats coming into the state for invasive species at the port of entry. And we have not just small trailer boats behind somebody's Volkswagen or pickup truck. We have bigger yachts coming in on flatbeds, both recreational and sometimes commercial, that just sail right through and aren't mandated to stop. And I'm very concerned about that, because it is a real high-risk scenario. So not something for today's issue, but perhaps we could address it later. I'd give it to Nate. He's got some time.
Well, our enforcement folks have been working with the commercial vehicle section of the State Patrol regarding this, and I don't know what all their protocols are, but, you know, once they start crossing into that commercial vessel size, they're required to stop at port of entries, and all of those ports of entry have even State Patrol personnel that have been trained what to watch for. Even if they're not going to actually deal with the problem, they can cause them to pull over, stop, wait in the parking lot. We're going to have Fish and Wildlife come. And there is some sort of a protocol that's in place to deal with that, but I'm not conversant enough on it to be able to tell you what that is.
Perhaps, Joe, we could get a briefing at some point.
You know. Yeah, Commissioner Carpenter, I'll put that on the to-do lister.
That's a good one. Thank you, Jim.
Yes.
Interesting, Jim, I recently, when I was fishing Banks Lake, one of the people on the boat was from Illinois, fishes Lake Erie a lot, and he told some really frightening stories about the conditions that they're facing in that area of the world.
Right.
So I'm glad to hear we have something in our region.
Well, just from an infrastructure standpoint, because of the Columbia Basin Irrigation System, which is over 600,000 acres of irrigated land, the Mid-Columbia Hydro Projects, and they're all the plumbing and fish passage hardware that's connected to those. If we ever get those established here, it's going to be a real nightmare.
Absolutely.
To manage, because we're still going to need our agriculture, and we're still going to need hydropower, and we're still going to need that fish passage through that hydropower. So it's going to be it's not that we're going to be able to just close the doors on everything. It's the costs and the equipment and staffing needed to stay ahead of that will be astronomical based on what we've seen in the Midwestern states, and the Southwest.
Yeah. Growing up in the Great Lakes area, I remember the day when there were no zebras, how fast they came in, and any substrate, artificial or natural, the colonization rate was up to like 30,000 per meter or something. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
One other thing I wanted to mention is, and I want to emphasize the responsibility and the great job that the people in Region 2 do with our salmon and steelhead populations. We have a great responsibility here. We produce all of the summer runs. We are the source of most of the sockeye, and our steelhead populations are also a big contributor to the Columbia River system. And Jim Brown and his staff have been very instrumental in providing us with support and on our efforts of emphasis on upriver passage, and is really going to help us as we move through the process that's been initiated to examine the spring salmon allotment, catch balancing, and upriver passage. And I really appreciate your help on that too, Jim. And the region has done an excellent job in terms of conservation and management of the salmon and steelhead species in our region.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. You know, we had some turnover in the fish side of the house, but I think Chad Jackson has hit the ground running and is taking the work that Jeff Korth had been doing and is taking it to a new level. So I'm really looking forward to those continuing efforts. Thank you.
I just have one quick acknowledgement as well. And I just have to note that this region is the only region that has a county that has all six of our grouse species in that county.
Yes.
Duly noted, Commissioner. Thank you.
On the note of Bonasa umbellis, we will
be done.
Okay. Any other thing? Thank you.
Thank you.